Welcome to TechNet Radio, your guide to the IT universe.
Hi, and welcome back to TechNet Radio. Thanks for joining me today. I'm Aurora Queen, and this is our show for Tuesday, January 16th, 2007. So we're hoping to bring you one of these a month. It's a series called The Community Corner, and it's with John Weston. Today he's talking to the exchange guy, Lee Benjamin, and Lee's an MVP and chairman of the largest exchange user group in the world, Exchange Server Boston, and a director for Boston User Groups. In this interview, they'll discuss Exchange Server 2007 and also talk about the Exchange community. But before we get into that, I wanted to tell you about some free events that are happening around the U.S. Microsoft is kicking off the next wave of software releases with events that start January 16th and continue through February 26th. These events will dive into Windows Vista, the new 2007 Microsoft Office system, and Exchange 2007, bringing specific information for IT professionals and developers like you. Even better, all attendees will receive a free copy of Office Professional 2007 and Office Groove 2007. At one of these launch events, you'll learn how the new Microsoft software can help you streamline deployment and management, increase security and your users' experiences and productivity. In addition, they'll talk about how to enable and support mobile users. And while you're at the event, you can network with peers and local technology partners or take the time to ask experts about the software. Register today before these events fill up. To register, visit technet.microsoft.com on the web or call 877-673-8368. The free software offer is good only to event attendees in the U.S. on the day of the event, and that's while supplies last, and you must be present to receive the product. For details, go to microsoft.com/business/US-launch-event-2007. But for now, here's John Weston interviewing Lee Benjamin on TechNet Radio.
Welcome. My name is John Weston, and welcome to the Community Corner here on TechNet Radio. Today with me, I've got Lee Benjamin, the Exchange Guy. Welcome, Lee.
Hi, John. How you doing today?
Doing good. So I brought in the expert, the guru, the man from Boston, the man that leads the largest Exchange user group up there in Boston. I've spoke with him a couple times up at his group, and he's a former Microsofter. So, Lee, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself to start off?
Well, let's see. I'm a long-term, I guess I've been doing email stuff for forever. It's actually, I guess now it's my 26th year, but I've given up saying that. It feels too old, so just sort of over 20
plus years, I guess. Let's see, huh?
Huh?
20 plus years, I guess, in messaging.
Yeah, that'll summarize it.
Well, cool. So today we're going to talk about this new product, Exchange 2007. So what's so special on it? Is it just another email system?
Well, no. I mean, Exchange, it's the next major release of Exchange. Exchange has been out for quite a while. And this release just does some really, you know, powerful things in terms of scalability and protection. Protection that we can dive into a little bit deeper, but really ways of increasing the level of get rid of the spam traffic that's out there, the extra emails that nobody really wants, and find an innovative ways to keep that stuff off of the user's desktop.
Cool. Sounds like it's a great product. I'm an end user of it myself. My mailbox has been on it for some time, and I love it. It's a great product. So one of the things I want to ask you about Exchange is I heard that it's 64-bit, whereas all previous versions of Exchange have been 32-bit, right? I mean, most server products today are 32-bit. Why did Microsoft decide to make this one be one of the first 64-bit server products out there?
Well, if you think about Exchange, it's really a very large, sophisticated database, and it needed the scalability improvements that could be gotten from 64-bit. Not just in terms of necessarily larger databases or more users per server, though those are all parts of the equation, but companies want to be able to scale up in those different areas. 64-bit, when it was talked about a year and 2 years ago, and you know people were sort of concerned, but the truth is any server that you've bought for the last 12 months is most likely a 64-bit server already. So it's not that big a hurdle to get over. And your entire environment doesn't have to be 64-bit Windows. But your Exchange servers need to be 64-bit Windows.
So can they address more memory now with 64-bit? Does that old 4-gigabyte limitation still exist?
Yeah, so the 4-gigabyte limitation is gone, and if one dove into the internals of Exchange, store.exe, which was the largest piece of Exchange, was literally limited to 896 megabytes by default, or you could push it to 1.2 gigabytes, but that's as far as it could go. Now those limitations are gone, and we're talking servers with 8, 16, 32 gigabytes of memory. Gosh, when I started with Exchange, and I had to go around to customers, this is in the early 90s, to tell them that this product would need 32 megabytes of memory. These are the days that people had 2 or 4 megabytes of memory on their desktops and 4 to 6, maybe 8 megabytes on their servers. So 32 gigabyte servers is quite a jump.
Yeah, I remember those days. I remember, here's a bit of trivia. What was the code name for Exchange before it was actually Exchange, when we had in Microsoft Mail? I remember, wasn't it called Hermes?
There are a number. Ago. Hermes is one. Spitfire is another.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I have a long list of code names.
Been a long time ago, but I remember those days when memory was expensive and all that kind of stuff. Now memory's getting relatively inexpensive, especially compared to those days.
Yeah.
Well, so, let's say, that, for example, I got an Exchange 2003 server today on a 32-bit computer. Can I just in-place upgrade that to Exchange 2007?
So the concept of in-place upgrade doesn't work with Exchange 2007, but for a very logical reason. Even if you were to upgrade the operating system in place from a 32-bit to a 64-bit system, well, there's no way to do that. It's not possible to actually do that. So, in effect, what you do, which is the same that people have been doing with Exchange for a number of years, and it's not that hard, is really doing the move mailbox migration. So we bring up a new Exchange 2007 server in the same organization that the Exchange 2003 server is in.
So in my one organization, I can have both 2003 and 2007 servers.
Absolutely.
Got
absolutely.
Okay.
And then you can just pull those mailboxes across.
Cool. That sounds a lot better than having to do an in-place upgrade anyhow. It looks like you got a failover or places you can go back to that if you need to.
That's true. If you needed to move users back or you had a problem. I was working with a customer on a recent 5.5 to 2003 upgrade, but they moved a few mailboxes and didn't realize that there was some other applications that were using those and had to move them back for a week while they did some fixing. So, yeah, it's always good to have a fallback procedure.
Cool. Well, I've heard about this thing called PowerShell or Nomad that comes with Exchange, and from my understanding, that's going to be in lots of Microsoft products. Can you tell me what's this all about? Is Microsoft abandoning the graphical user interface and making us go back to the command prompt?
Well, there's always been a back and forth between customers who want to be able to do everything in the GUI and customers who want to be able to automate capabilities of Exchange and, like you said, other products. The PowerShell, which is the technology behind the Exchange Management Shell, and the Exchange Management Console is really built on PowerShell. So everything that is done that Exchange is done in the GUI is actually built on the command shell, and even more can be done in the command shell. Now, if you think about it, probably 80%, you know, of the things that people want to do on a regular basis are in the command shell, or in the GUI, and yet there's some other things that would need to be done at the command line within PowerShell. I see a sort of a whole market growing, and Microsoft has begun to even encourage contests, if you will, and people are writing packages of commands that people want to be able to do easily in their environment. And I fully expect to see a plugin of sort of my favorite commandlets, my favorite functions that I would like to add to my GUI.
So that PowerShell allows me not just a command prompt, but I can script things. So if I had, let's say, tens of thousands of users and needed to do a lot of mass changes that might take some time to do in the graphical user interface, I could now write code and execute it in that environment?
Absolutely. Now, of course, the truth is one could do that with Exchange all the way back to Exchange 4 and 5.5.5 with different technologies and importing CSV files and so on. But now it's a lot easier and a lot more powerful to be able to do that and looking at the system and checking quotas and, you know, provisioning, you know, think about it, Exchange, you know, provisioning, like you said, tens of thousands of mailboxes to be able to do that in a scripted, automated environment.
Cool. Well, I understand I went out today just to our website, Microsoft.com/Exchange, and splashes up there on the website are the three pillars or three themes of Exchange 2007. Anywhere access, operational efficiency, and then I think you mentioned the third one before, built-in protection. What are these three themes all about?
Well, I ran up and looked at the same web page actually this morning, but if we think about it, it's easy really to break them down. So the first one is, you know, anywhere access. It's no longer just about Outlook getting to your Exchange data, and it's no longer about Outlook web access to be able to get to your data. But now I want to be able to get it from wherever I am, whatever device. So one of those capabilities is, how do you do full Outlook over the Internet? Well, some people do VPN, and that's a good solution. But another one is this idea that in Exchange 2003 it was called RPC over HTTP. That doesn't roll off the tongue, but basically it's encrypt the RPC packets inside of secure web packets. Now they're going to call that anywhere access, and I think that's a great thing that finally the marketing people got a hold of that name. The other clients, though, that we need to think about are mobile clients, you know, my PDA and my cell phone, and unified messaging is a whole new area for Exchange 2007 to get into. Operational efficiency, we talked about the management console, which is now available, and the scripting capabilities. Another one that I always pull out is the Exchange Best Practices Analyzer, EXBTA, an incredible way to look at your Exchange environment, tell what's going on, compare it to quote-unquote best practices, may or may not be yours, you may choose to override them, but to be able to look and say that, gee, why is my server configured a particular way? And that tool is now built in as well. And then the protection stuff. Yeah, we talked about protection. There are a few protection features that really excite me about where Exchange is going at this point. One of those is the edge transport. Edge transport is, there are five roles with Exchange 2007, but edge transport is a different role. What's different about the edge transport is that this hardened SMTP MTA is really designed and built to live inside the perimeter or the DMZ of your network. Contrary to earlier versions of Exchange, there's no IIS on the edge transport server. There's no Active Directory on the edge transport server. Actually, that's not true. There's a little tiny Active Directory, but it's not your corporate Active Directory. It's a little Active Directory that holds your email addresses and information like that so that the edge knows what to act on. And your internal Exchange pushes out information from your corporate Active Directory out into the perimeter to your edge server, and with things like email addresses and your allow and deny lists that can now percolate all the way from Outlook through your Exchange server and out to your perimeter network. So that's pretty powerful. The other security one that really gets me going is that Exchange will finally support something called opportunistic TLS. That is, right now, most of the email that goes over the Internet, the SMTP of the world, is unencrypted. It's raw text. Now, most of the people who are listening to TechNet Radio know that, but most of the users, well, some of them may not even know that. With TLS, Transport Layer Security, that's encrypting SMTP down, and basically any server that's capable of automatically turning on TLS, not only Exchange servers, but other servers, will start encrypting traffic over the internet from edge to edge. And that's going to be pretty neat. That's going to be a great improvement.
That's neat. They didn't even know all those features existed. You mentioned there's five roles, edge server being one of them. What are the other four then?
Well, let's see. So other roles include the client access server. That is the role. Well, let me just list them first. Client access server, the hub transport server, the mailbox server, and the unified messaging server.
Cool.
Okay. The client access server is like the Exchange front-end server today. It allows communication to come in from the outside world, Outlook web access, connecting up through your mobile devices, and so on. The hub transport is your internal message router. The mailbox server, self-explanatory, that holds the mailboxes and public folders if you still use them. And then there's a unified messaging role, which is integration into PBXs to be able to do voice messaging inside of Exchange.
Cool. You mentioned public folders there. Now, I had heard, a year ago that when Microsoft comes out with the next version of Exchange, public folders were going away. Is that not true now?
Public folders will go away eventually.
They're still there now, right?
Huh?
They're still supported in Exchange 2007.
They're still fully supported, and the functionality is there. Well, almost fully supported. The functionality is all there, and they will be supported as long as Exchange 2007 is out there, which is 5 years full support and an additional five, so up to 2017 if you've got a support contract. Basically, though, it's time to migrate public folders to other places, and that's what companies need to look at. The most logical, obvious choice is moving much of that functionality into SharePoint.
Got it. And so SharePoint sounds like the place to be.
SharePoint, it's the third release of SharePoint, SharePoint 2007, both SharePoint services and SharePoint server, as a higher-end capability there. And they've really evolved SharePoint over the years, and it now has many of the features that people actually did with public folders. So there's a large task out there for companies that some companies have thousands of public folders, lots of data, and they're going to have to look at that data and decide what to do with it, whether to get rid of some of it, whether to migrate it to SharePoint, or looking at other technologies and building other applications. But you've got time. You've got a number of years to do that, and the capabilities, the support for public folders is still there. But of interest, a new company installing Exchange gets a question. Do you want to put public folders in or not? So it's no longer required.
Got it. Cool. That's really neat. So they're still supported. They're still there, but let's start moving things in the direction of SharePoint.
There you go.
Cool. So I hear that Exchange 2007 is shipping at the end of this month in January, and so let's say I'm an IT pro. I don't call myself an IT. I call myself a network administrator, and I've got Exchange today. How do I get ready for Exchange 2007? What should I be doing? We may not deploy for, let's say, 6 months, but what do I need to be doing today to get ready?
Well, let's see. You can already download the eval version of the release code, and if people want to bring that up in their labs, and at some point you absolutely want to do that, that may not be your first step. But put it up, kick the tires, understand what it can do in your environment. There's also a real neat capability that, TechNet's always had a neat capability, or for the last number of years, to evaluate these products in a virtual environment online. And if you do a search for TechNet Labs, those are really easy to find, and that's another way to start looking at the product. You can also download a rather large, but a virtual hard drive, a set of virtual images to evaluate Exchange inside your internal virtual environment. Now, the other thing to do, of course, is to start reading what's out there and what people are talking about. Documentation, there's lots of it out there. There are various books coming, and there's the community that you focus on with inside these discussions, that lots of articles that are being written, how-to guides, understanding what's the difference between versions? How do you deal with certain problems? How do you deal with certain issues? What is the path to upgrade? I went out and did a look just the other day on what are the features in SharePoint that mimic or parallel public folder capabilities, so that people evaluating that can actually look and say, is that going to meet my needs?
Got it. Okay. Well, I understand there's also the new Office 2007 coming out at the same time, so new Outlook, Word, and Excel, and all that fun stuff. Do I have to upgrade both at the same time? So do I need to upgrade my Exchange servers and my Outlook clients at the same time?
Well, of course, you don't have to do them at the same time, and that really depends on an organization's schedule for upgrades and timing and equipment and all of those sorts of things. There are some features, however, that tie together and are going to be a little bit better if you do both things together. But that's not a requirement in order to be able to do that.
Okay. Are there some advantages? Should I do one first or the other? I mean, so could I leave my clients on Office, let's say, 2000 or 2003, and go ahead and get some benefit by upgrading to Exchange 2007?
Well, so there's definite improvements that you're going to get out of the Exchange server from an infrastructure and from scalability and the new command line capabilities. Definitely makes sense. Again, I don't know that this is one that you can sort of say you must do it this way or you must do it the other way. Really depends on the organization. Now, for myself, though in some ways it's a bigger hurdle, depending on the size of your company, to upgrade all of the desktops, the changes to the user interface in Office 2007 and Outlook 2007 are really phenomenal. The speed of searching in Outlook 2007 is just incredible. I mean, folks, don't do this at home, but for testing purposes, I have a 5 gigabyte mailbox. Now, Exchange will support that, by the way, and I usually do that just to break things during betas, but I can literally search through that entire offline store through my mailbox in Exchange in less than 10 seconds, usually within a folder with 5,000 items, in a couple of seconds, and that is just wonderful to be able to see.
Yep, that's neat. But are they using SQL now to do that with, or is that still a little Jet Engine database?
Well, it's not the little old Jet Engine database. It's SQL.
You can tell I'm a SQL guy.
you're a SQL. Okay. Well, this one goes way back, and it's bounced to both sides of the equation over the years. And yes, at one point, Microsoft said, hey, the Exchange database will become SQL database. About 2 years ago, maybe three, came out and said, well, not right now. So most things that needed to be done with Exchange in terms of performance, scalability, and scriptability, and so on, were able to be done in the 64-bit version of the Jet database. Someday, will it be SQL? Yeah, maybe. But nothing to think about right now. Historically, by the way, SQL could not do what it is that an Exchange database does, and Microsoft didn't own SQL in the very beginning, so couldn't have changed it if they had wanted to.
Got it. Okay. Well, the other piece I wanted to talk to you about is the IT Pro communities. TechNet is all about IT professionals, those people out there making the infrastructure work for everybody's network. I know the user groups are a key part of this, and you're a key player in the user groups. You run the Exchange Boston user group. So tell me about your experience running this or helping. Did you help it start it, or tell me all about Exchange Boston?
Well, it's a little unclear. Exchange Server Boston is the webpage for the user group. It goes so far back into history that I think indirectly I quasi got it off the ground when I worked for Microsoft back in the 90s. And other people had it for a while, and then I've taken it back. And here in New England, we have an amazing number of user groups, both focused on the Microsoft and everything else under the sun. There are over 50 user groups here in the Boston area.
Wow.
Every night of the week, something is going on in either in the Microsoft offices or various locations, corporate and college and so on in the surrounding states. I mean, we're talking, you know, user groups in Rhode Island, in Connecticut, in Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine. I mean, you know, just absolutely amazing. The exchange group's been around for quite a while and has a rather large population that wants to keep knowledgeable about what's going on. So there's beginning to be a shift in how does one provide user group services, which are about community and interacting with peers, and evolving that and tying that into things that are going on the web, blogs and wikis and news groups and so on. So those are some interesting things that user groups are having to face and figure out at this point.
So how big is your user group? How many users?
Well, let's see. If I go by the numbers,
yeah.
If I go by the numbers, there are about 950 people registered for the Exchange Server Boston membership database. And then we've got about 450 that are on what we call a Tech Tips list. Tech Tips is an email-based discussion group of peers in working with Exchange Server. Now, the reason I say that's a guess, I'm waiting actually to find it until that number goes over 1,000, and we should be there pretty soon. And then I need to do a cleanup, because the interesting question is, how many of those messages aren't getting through anymore because of anti-spam? How many ways are preventing some of that mail from going through? So, though it's a little bit funny and unfair, but I want to get to 1,000, and then I'll clean it up and make people validate and re-verify their numbers.
And so you guys have meetings, I assume, kind of like monthly. How often does that happen? I mean, how many people come to those?
Meetings happen every month or every couple of months. This group's a little bit in flux. Being one of the oldest groups out there, it's trying to get its running legs back underneath it. But when we get anywhere from 30 to 50 and sometimes, you know, larger groups, depending on what the topics are. For the next couple of months, we're going to be more tying things into obviously the launch events that are going on. And then something that a number of groups here in the Boston area have done very successfully in the past, load fests or lab fests, if you will. So back with Exchange 2003, when it came out, also Windows and also Office, we did some events where we bring people in on a weekday or on a Saturday, have them bring their own machines, install products, get them up and running, and do some ad hoc training. Again, all community related, all, you know, just from the bottom of our hearts, because that's the stuff we like to do. And working with the folks at Microsoft and Colmenis, and figuring out what we can do in the area of not just launch events, but also really getting people's hands on with the new products.
That's cool. I mean, you almost kind of answered my next question. I was going to ask you, why in the world do you do it? I mean, obviously you don't make financial rewards for running a user group. What motivates you to spend all that hard effort and time involved to make something like that a success and grow it?
Well, it is a tough question, and I've asked myself a number of times. And different people give back in different ways, and I'm a technology guy. This is what I enjoy doing, and this is a way to share that knowledge, and it's just very satisfying to be able to do that. You're right, though, it's not one for financial gain, and I get, you know, I rarely get any business out of it into my consulting world, but more it's for the connections. It's for people who want to be able to say, hey, how do I deal with such and such, or what do you think about this product, whether it's, you know, the core product and a piece of functionality, or, you know, what do people know about a third party, and, you know, good, bad, indifferent, and introducing third party vendors as well to Exchange administrators.
Cool. That's really neat. Well, I see that you're also in the Microsoft MVP program. Tell me about that right quick.
Wow. The Microsoft MVP program is really a neat capability where Microsoft goes out and sort of finds or people nominate people who are very knowledgeable about their product and very involved in community, like I am with user groups and many MVPs are heavily involved in news groups, and in today's world, blogs and wikis. Another area that I'm very present to the community, you know, is I do a fair number of interviews and seminars, about the Microsoft products and technologies, and not all good. I mean, some commentary and some criticism, but really looking at what the products are and where their good points and their shortcomings are. There's 2,700 MVPs around the world, approximately. There's 100 Exchange MVPs, and I'm very proud to be one of those 100.
That's cool. You mentioned you're going to be working with the launches coming up. Where, if people want to go see you at a product launch, where are you going to be? I assume all over, but...
Well, I'm linking up to a few of them. I'm obviously going to be involved in Boston on... Oh, gee, I'm trying to remember.
That's the 24th, I think.
24th.
January, isn't it?
I may be down in New York City next Tuesday, the 15th, 16th?
Yep, 16th.
For that launch. And then I know you're going to be up here in February.
Yep, we're going to do Portland, Maine, Nashua, New Hampshire, and where else? Hartford, Connecticut.
There you go. So I'm going to be at least at one of those and perhaps all three.
Well, great. Well, I sure appreciate you joining me today, Lee. This has been Lee Benjamin, the Exchange guy, who runs the Exchange user group up in Boston. And I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you very much, John. Appreciate it and look forward to doing more stuff with you.
Thanks, Lee. We'll talk to you later.
And that was John Weston and Lee Benjamin on TechNet Radio. So there's a ton of Exchange webcasts coming up. There's actually a 24-part series starting up on Friday, January 19th. And it's called 24 Hours of Exchange Server 2007. So like I said, the first webcast is on Friday the 19th at 11:30 a.m. Pacific Time. And that's a TechNet webcast titled Integrations of Exchange Server 2007 and Active Directory. The one link you'll need to take you to all these webcasts is microsoft.com/events/series/tnexchangeserver.mspx. And I'll also put the link to that series up on our site, microsoft.com/tnradio. Join us next week when we have another episode of How Microsoft Does IT. This one will be about how Microsoft IT deployed SharePoint services. If you want to email us, let us know what you think of the show. Our email address is tnradio@microsoft.com. Thanks as always for listening. I look forward to next time. For TechNet Radio, I'm Aurora Queen.
Have comments or want to request a story idea? Call us at 1-877-814-6506.